This episode, we are talking about Ian Restrell, whom Kate has not told me anything about. This is Just in the Audience, and you're listening to Life World.
Hi, Derek. So you have not heard about Ian Restrell?
Not at all.
He's a pretty famous, he shows up in a lot of stories about white hat hacking.
Oh, okay.
Sort of.
Sort of.
I love this story so much. Should I get rolling?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Let's do it.
Justin's out of the way. I pushed him away from the desk. We're good.
It's all just you now.
Just me. He's just in the audience.
Are you a little ashamed of that? Like, are you?
A little bit.
Okay, fair. So, 1983 is when Ian Restrell was born. Somewhere in the greater Baltimore area.
Okay.
Not very much known about his childhood.
Seems to be the case for a lot of the early, I say early because, you know, 83 is like a year older than me, but that earlier tech stories, you usually don't hear a whole lot about their childhoods from what I'm finding.
Well, and I have to imagine at least some of it is because, especially then, you have to be on the upper side of the normal curve for socioeconomic status. Like, you've got to have enough stability to have money for a computer, time to learn your way around things online, that sort of deal.
Okay.
As far as I understand, at least through his teenage years, his parents were still married. And there was reference in one place to a younger brother, although I don't know how much I believe that. The big deal about this kid is that he had joined a network, an official network, of black hat hackers. Yeah.
Official network. What makes it official? Is it the name tags? Is there like a license? Is it just a top hat, like sticker that goes on your ID?
Computer Insider newsletter.
Oh, okay.
Which the report I read said 900 people were on the mailing list by 1998.
Pretty decent following for, you know, a magazine newsletter, basically.
Right, in the late 90s, where this is all still pretty new.
Yeah.
And the reports were that this network of black hat hackers included kids that were as young as 9 years old. Because the theory was these kids could get into, like, libraries to use the, you know, the computer stations in the children's library that were less carefully monitored, that kind of deal.
Oh, yeah, and also the rise of technology in schools around that point as well.
That's the theory. Although, I mean, still, you know, 98, that's when I graduated college. And so it was still comparatively unusual for, you know, people to have desktops in their homes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were walking into the library. I remember being in the Salem Public Library in, must have been late 99, and having someone come in and ask if they could borrow the internet. Which I love.
I mean, in fairness, any of my friends say the same thing when they come over to my house as well.
I mean, can I use the whole internet for a little while? Can I take it home? So there's this article in a newspaper called The New Republic. Talks about how it starts with him, like, literally having a tantrum. Like, I want more money. I can quote it for you. It's so bad. Just the tantrum is so bad. It's, I want more money. I want a Miata. I want a trip to Disney World. I want an X-Book comic book number one. I want a lifetime subscription to Playboy and throw in Penthouse. Show me the money. It's a stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I have a hard time imagining this being actually what a 15-year-old would say at any point in time ever. But okay. I mean, this was after Jerry Maguire, so Show Me the Money was sort of in circulation by then. So, I mean, I guess.
But basically, he came up to his folks with the ransom list.
Right? Well, and that's what it was, kind of, is that he was in the offices of a company called Juked Micronics.
Okay.
Spelled J-U-K-T.
Ah, very edgy.
Right? Hardcore. He had hacked their network. Gone into, I don't know, I can't say it any better than hacked, but he had accessed their employee, their HR database,
mm-hmm.
and had gotten also into their website. And I am advanced enough to understand that especially then, any employee records are kept pretty far separate from your public website.
Generally, yeah. There's been recent news stories about quote-unquote data leaks involving specifically the ones that I'm thinking about off the top of my head are with the Electronic Software Association, where they basically just doxed all of the reporters that were at their events via a document that was linked on their main page, but sure.
That doesn't seem very polite, does it?
No.
Well, this is in, I mean, at this point in time, late 90s, a lot of places wouldn't necessarily even have their employee, their HR database online, you know, an intranet, but not an internet.
Mm-hmm.
Which for listeners, intranet meaning entirely enclosed within the company, but not necessarily connecting to any place outside. Yeah. His username. This is so awful. This is disgusting. His username. I'm going to try. Okay. It's Big Bad Bionic Boy. Same thing. Yeah. That is exactly my response, although I giggled a little more.
I mean, it feels like it's missing a few X's in there and some numbers. Right. But again, early days of the internet, it wasn't taken yet.
It hadn't been taken yet. Ah, shit, now I need to go find out if it's available on Facebook. What he had done, apparently, is take over the Juked Micronics website, posted all of the employees' salaries publicly.
Oh, shit.
As well as random porn images.
As you do.
Well, I mean, if you're a 15-year-old boy especially, but, you know.
Well, and I mean, just from a persona standpoint, if it was just the salaries, you would assume maybe it was somebody from within the company, but they probably wouldn't throw the porn with it, so maybe it's an extra, like, hey, obviously I'm not part of your company.
I guess. I mean, now I'll tell you, I worked hard, and I wasn't able to find any of these images. So, very disappointing.
Depending on how, hang on, it was Juked Microsystems?
Don't, stop, nope. Back away.
Archive.org is a wonderful tool, people.
Oh my god, back away, Derek, let me tell the story, back okay. away. I see you, back I'm away, fucker.
Closing my browser and going back to Skype so it doesn't fuck with my audacity settings.
Thank you. Okay, so you can look soon. You can do your research okay. soon. So the existing software and web engineers at Juked Micronics were not able to figure out how he managed to hack their system. And through means not entirely clear to me, his high school principal learned of the hack before his parents did. And so the principal called the parents to say, you should probably hire a defense attorney right now. And the parents go to the kid and were like, tell me of this defense attorney we should be hiring. And his response was, no, you should hire an agent. And apparently that's another thing, is there are like agents for hackers. So that, I mean, because otherwise, like, tell me, how does a company go about finding someone who has been a black hat hacker and converting them to a white hat hacker?
So a lot of the early days of the internet, whether it be various worms that would get out there, for those unfamiliar, worms are basically software codes that will dig through your systems and then use your system to get elsewhere, basically just stringing along further and further. But I remember being a lot younger and hearing these stories about different hackers and basically being like, yeah, you know, this thing happened in the tech world. This guy's going to get picked up by whatever company, you know, be it McAfee or any sort of like Microsoft, IBM, things like that, because you're showing that I was able to exploit your system in a public way. You're going to throw the book at me either way. However, a lot of the time you would also hear the story of, well, maybe we'll lessen the sentence, like publicly facing, we're going to take you down, but really we're going to pay your bail. We're going to pay for throwing this suit at this case out of the courts and things like that.
Well, you're right in saying suit, because in this, you know, the late 90s, there weren't that many laws in place that were that clear for criminal purposes, but there were laws in place for civil purposes. So it would be more of a lawsuit, like for money, damages, that sort of way. Mm-hmm. Whereas now it's more black and white in terms of privacy invasion and that kind of a thing. So that now there are criminal charges.
Yeah. And it's the mentality. It's kind of like what you see on YouTube nowadays when something goes viral and then all they make the press circuits and they build their brand that way. This was the way to do it as a hacker.
Okay. So the idea of there being an agent for hackers?
That I have not heard of.
Joe Hiert, H-I-E-R-T, I guess apparently had been an attempted basketball agent, but had kind of failed at that. But he knew how to negotiate salary and employment and that kind of thing. And one of his son's friends, 21-year-old Ty Harris, had broken into an internet security firm as early as 1995. And the software maker paid Harris like $1 million to bring him on board because they just needed help building a better network. And so he got the idea to serve as, I'm going to step in as a hacker agent now.
Yeah, because, I mean, in theory, if you're, a 21-year-old kid, if you're a 15-year-old kid, you're not going to know what to ask for. You're not going to know what salary you're negotiating because you don't really understand the consequence of what you just did and what it means for their company.
In theory, yeah. So that's how this kid, Ian Restrell, ended up in the offices of Juked Micronics. Okay. So this article, like I said, it appeared in New Republic by Stephen Glass, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Stephen Glass, and then we'll come back to Restrell.
All right.
Stephen Glass, does that name ring a bell?
Nope.
This one was a little bit harder to search up just because his name is so common.
Yeah. It sounds like a bad comic book character name.
Right? Right? I'm Stephen Glass, but secretly, I'm Thoughts and Prayers Man.
We just found out Justin's secret identity.
Stephen Glass. Yeah, our Thoughts and Prayers Man. Either one. So, Stephen Glass, born September 5th, 1972, in Highland Park, Illinois, so right near Chicago. And so, he graduated high school. Again, normal childhood, as far as we know. Graduated high school. The only sort of standout thing that I know about him from high school is that he was in something called Adventures of the Mind, which is like this after-school program, but then it has competitions. And you have both immediate and long-term challenges. And so a long-term challenge, for instance, would be like write and perform a play based on some specific topic. Okay. And then the immediate challenges are like write a song in the next 15 minutes.
Interesting. Okay.
You want to know how I know about it? I was in it. Not with him. He's 5 years older than I am, but I was in. I think in New York State they call it Odyssey of the Mind, but it's the same concept. So, like, I don't remember a lot of them, although I remember that our play was about Pompeii and that our song was about Mr. Ed.
Sure.
I mean, why not? And, yeah. So, it's just a neat, like, flexing imagination. It's a neat way to play around in the public school system because, even back in my day, the public school system is already turning into standardized testing, and it's very sort of dry and boring.
Oh, yeah, that was my high school career in a nutshell.
I mean, it was no fun. And so this was something where, like, we were able to convince them to open up, like, weird little back classrooms that were no longer in use to let us rehearse and that kind of deal, which really we just figured out how to pop out the floating ceiling and crawl around inside the ceiling of my school, because why not? So anyway, he was in that. He went to Penn State. He worked for the Daily Pennsylvanian student newspaper, graduated in 1994. And in 1995, he joined the staff of the New Republic. This happens to have been the last article that he wrote for the New Republic. Can you guess why?
It's either sudden death syndrome or he went dark so he could stay out of the public eye for doing nefarious things.
Well, he should have. No, Ian Restrell never existed. Juked Micronics, never a thing.
Interesting.
There is no such thing as Computer Insider, newsletter and everything. But he created it. So, like, that was how desperate he was to make this story, is that he created a website for Micronics. He created a corporate phone number based out of California. He even had his brother answer the phone and speak as though he was the president of Juked Micronics. He had business cards, and he had copies of this Computer Insider newsletter for this network of black hat hackers from age 9 and up.
Huh.
Right? I mean, love this guy.
that's totally the fake it till you make it personification right there.
I mean, it's crazy illegal for journalists. Like, journalistic integrity was, you know, that's been codified, and you can get sued and you can get fired and all of the things, which he got fired. But he didn't really get sued, in large part because everybody was appalled at how far he'd been able to go. He wrote 41 articles for the New Republic. 27 of them are demonstrably false.
Wow.
Right? And so you wonder about the other 14. Like, I have my doubts. They just weren't able to prove it. So his story was broken by this guy, Adam Pennenberg, who worked for Forbes. And back in the day, this is when we still felt this need to separate out, like, Forbes magazine from Forbes digital media.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam Pennenberg worked for the digital side.
Okay.
And he decided, like, oh my God, this sucks that this 25-year-old kid was able to somehow scoop us. Like, how did he find this story and I didn't? And so he started by going, you know, typing in, you know, it wasn't even Google back then. It would have been like, what, Netscape or Dogpile?
Yeah.
Which, kids, if you're listening in at home, Dogpile really was one of the original internet search engines, and it was just as awful as you think it might be for being called Dogpile.
Oh, yeah. No, that's – damn. Yeah, I'm thinking of all the different search engines I used to use before it was just all Google and Bing.
Yeah, Dogpile. And the big thing about Dogpile was that Dogpile was like the precursor to Google, in the sense mm-hmm. that there was Netscape, there was Internet Explorer, not much else at the time that I knew of. Bing was one of the early ones. And Dogpile would go through and look up all of them for you at once, so you didn't have to run the same search on 5 different search engines. Very exciting. Not so much anymore, but whatever. And so he pulls up whichever Explorer he used, types in Juked Micronics, and gets this incredibly childlike, very basic HTML format mm-hmm. website. And he was just like, Micronics is probably going to have a better website than this. And I mean, I had a website in 1998 that was probably better than what they're describing. I haven't seen it, but...
Oh, that's why I want to look it up, because same.
I mean, go for it now. You can look shit up now. It doesn't bother me. But I just didn't want you to, like, jump the shark on this one. But, so Juked Micronics. Crappy website. He calls the phone number, and somebody answered, but it sounded like there were people just sort of hanging out in the background, and he thought that was a little bit weird. And just generally, he felt like, this doesn't seem right. And the more work he did to sort of dig into this story, he wasn't finding anything. And this includes things like, there were references to a multi-state task force that was being set up to try and catch these people. The Center for Interstate Online Investigations, that was never a thing.
Yeah.
There's an anti-hacker computer security center, which helped draft the Uniform Computer Security Act. Those two, not things. And so, you know, Pennenberg is kind of having this experience of, like, I'm supposed to be on the cutting edge of things, and I'm not finding anything.
Yeah, and I did find a picture of the Juked Micronics. Yeah, it's GeoCities level of early internet. Although, for the time, it probably would have been a little bit more professional than this, but not by much.
Well, I think it's actually was hosted on AOL at the time, which is part of the issue.
Okay.
Because most computer security firms not going to use AOL as a host.
Yeah, yeah.
So Adam Pennenberg first is upset that he's been scooped. Now he's upset that he's been made to look like an idiot by somebody who's just making shit up. So he calls Charles Lane, the editor at the New Republic, And Lane kind of immediately describes having like this sinking feeling because they hired Glass on staff in 1995. And as early as 1996, they started to become these allegations of plagiarism and of inaccuracies in Stephen Glass's work, including like DARE and the National Republican Party were calling up and saying, hey, not cool, change that. And so they kept changing it, and he always had a story, and he kind of thought on his feet. So Lane calls Glass and says, all right, you said that you met Ian Restrell at the Hyatt. He's like, meet me at this hotel, and let's talk this through.
Which, out of context, sounds absolutely terrible, by the way.
Right, meet me at this hotel, and we'll figure this all out? Yeah.
Yeah, when you're talking to, like, a 15-year-old.
No, the 15-year-old never existed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's talking to Glass at this point.
Yeah, he's called, okay. Because they can't find Restrell anywhere. They can't find the family, and it's a weird last name, R-E-S-T-R-I-L. He's like, meet me here. Let's talk about this case. I can't find this kid. I can't find his family. I can't find the company. You know, just come meet me here. And Glass was smart enough that he took note of certain details in the hotel lobby as he went through to sit down with his boss to be like, oh, yeah, this is what that was there. This has been moved. You know, the kinds of thing that would be really hard to substantiate one way or the other.
Okay.
Ultimately, he gets caught. He gets, you know, first put on administrative leave and then kicked out altogether. And like I said, that's when they discover that 27 out of his 41 articles are clearly either plagiarized, made up, or some combination thereof. So what do you suppose they did to him?
Other than fire him?
Yeah, a better question is, what do you suppose happened after he was fired?
Oh, geez. Well, knowing how giddy you are about revealing the spoiler stuff of this story to me, did they hire him on at this other, at the Forbes Electronic or?
Oh, no, he went to law school. Right?
I don't know if that eye roll was audible or not.
Pretty much. Do you need to like whack the back of your head to bring me up? Not just any law school, mind you. He went to Georgetown.
Okay. Keep going.
He graduated in 2000, and then he moved to New York State, and he passed the bar exam. But this is what I'm very excited about. Go New York, right? Is that the Committee for Bar Examiners turned him down despite the fact that he passed the bar because they had some concerns over his moral fitness.
I mean, the duration of time between the two, I would argue in his favor, especially with the fact of who better to know how to get away or get somebody off of, you know, being charged with a crime than someone who actually got away with the crime for a little while.
Are you getting cynical?
A little bit.
So, he also applied for the bar in California. He was not accepted there as well. And I mean, over and over and over in California, like, he pushed hard. He appealed and he appealed again and then he appealed that and they just kept saying no. In the middle of all of this, he did another thing, which I love. This is funny. It's funny. He published a novel. Novel. Can you hear my visual quotes on that one? He published a novel. It's called The Fabulist. Because apparently The Liar was taken.
Well, we already knew that he wasn't, you know, great with coming up with names with Big Bad Bionic Boy.
Right? No, this novel is called The Fabulist. It is about a journalist in the Washington, D.C. area who gets caught and in trouble due to integrity problems.
Yeah, it's writing what you know.
It's pretty bad.
He's plagiarizing himself at that point, so I mean, it's all good.
It doesn't count then. I think it's just meta. That same year, 2003, coincidentally, right at the same time that his book came out, there's a movie. Hayden Christensen plays the lead character, plays Stephen Glass. The movie is called Shattered Glass. It's actually not bad.
Yeah, I saw that pop up on the when I was looking for the website. Okay, go on.
It's not bad. I mean, I'm not recommending you go watch it. I'm not going to watch it again, but I remember seeing it then. He goes dark after that, to a degree. Like, every couple years, the story gets rehashed and pulled back up again. He wrote an article about the legalization of marijuana for Rolling Stone in 2004. Totally nothing to do with anything else except it amuses me.
Now we know what he was doing all this, like, for those couple year spans every time.
Snacking and smoking, I think. And in 2016, he came back to North Carolina and gave a talk at Duke Law School. When he talked, damn it, he talked about journalistic integrity. And at that point, he claimed that he had repaid as much as $200,000 to the New Republic, Harper's Magazine, Forbes, Rolling Stone, Policy Review, This American Life, and George.
Sure.
I mean, he can say it. Like, I don't believe a damn thing he says in print anymore. But he says that he repaid basically whatever salary they ever paid him plus interest.
With no court proceedings for any of this. That's the part where I'm getting cynical again.
Right? I mean, I don't know. He says that, you know, because bear in mind, too, this is 2004. So this is 10 plus years after all of this went down. For some of it went down. You know, and so why wait 10 years and then start doing this stuff? And he says that he was, like, suicidally depressed after getting caught. And one thing that other people do describe him as seeming sort of fragile. Like, he would push himself too hard and then he would sort of collapse. And that he didn't seem to have a good, you know, he was sort of an all or nothing kind of guy.
See, I'm an asshole. I'm not going to make a glass joke at that.
I mean, Shattered Glass is the name of the movie, so, yeah. No, his glass was neither half full nor half empty. I don't know. Go ahead. Go. Be an asshole. Do it.
No, but what's really interesting, so they made a movie about his story, basically. The story that he crafted, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
They used the name, so he would have had to be paid, have been paid royalties for this. So I'm thinking, you know, 10 years down the line, that money started running out, so he needed to figure out something to do.
Maybe. I mean, the thing is, I don't know. He doesn't make it clear. Like, in his, so the article that tells me that he paid this back, which, again, they're very clear about saying that he says he did. Mm-hmm. Not that he necessarily did, but the emphasis from him, from his narrative, is I was always terrified I was going to get caught, and I just kept getting more and more desperate, which is kind of not what you do when you're afraid of getting caught, but whatever, that's a side path. But that he had such a fragile mental state, and that he got into therapy, and it took therapy for him to realize that he should probably return his salary.
Fair, but then also in his statements, like you had mentioned, he states that he had paid back Rolling Stone. Why would you have had to do that?
I think he moonlighted. Okay. Moonlighted. The thing, past tense of moonlight. That's what he did.
Gotcha.
So, you know, and so basically, so he got paid by each of these different magazines. But I mean, it's tricky. Like, the George magazine went out of business around 2000, give or take. Because George Magazine was the one that was put out by JFK Jr.
Oh, okay.
And side note on JFK Jr. is that he died in 1999. And I was on the beach where his plane washed up when it washed up.
Oh, wow.
George went out of business not too long after that. They didn't keep that magazine running very, very long after JFK Jr. died. So why you repay a magazine that's been out of print for 15 years? Like, I'm not following.
Maybe he paid the estate, but again, it's all of these different layers that's just proving more and more that this is just one big con.
This guy is an excellent fabulist. I gotta go. And so now he's still alive and kicking. He lives in California right now.
Is he a computer consultant? Just because that would perfectly round this out.
Close. Really kind of close. He is technically a paralegal for a personal injury firm in Beverly Hills, and he helps them with, among other things, their public relations and computer presence, their web presence.
All right.
Because he was never a hacker. He just knew a pretend one once. One of my favorite lines from his, this is his, and in the article that this is based on, by the way, that Stephen Glass's article is called Hack Heaven, and you can find it, it's on Pennenberg.com. It's, you know, he kept track of all of the media that he had to work with. So it's called Hack Heaven, and there's a line in here that talks about how, you know, hacker schemes, meaning when companies find a black hat hacker, this idea of having, like, agents and having black hat hackers that are available for hire and that kind of an idea. And Stephen Glass described these as, he said, a cynic might say that hacker schemes look an awful lot like protection rackets. That's an awful nice computer network you got there. It'd be a shame if somebody broke into it.
Which, I mean, is the most hacker ransomware anyway.
Right.
So he wasn't wrong.
Well, and that's the thing is that, I've done photojournalism, but I've never written at this level. At all, but I can see how the temptation is there. Like, I've written research papers and shit, and there's times where you're like, I know where this comes from. You know where it comes from? It comes from common fucking sense. But you can't do that. Like, you have to find sources, and you can't plagiarize, no matter who you're plagiarizing. And so, you know, you have to kind of acknowledge your sources, and you can't make things up. You have to cite where you got this from. And he just felt like, no, I know better. I know, you know, it sounds good, and so we're going to go with that. And the reality is it does sound good, but you can't just go with that.
Yeah, you're right.